we are on Kapitel Yud Tes in Tehillim. Nina, do you want a paper?
Yeah.
Okay. You get two pages, actually. Right, now, one of the things that we want to remember is that what was the whole goal in David HaMelech's writing the Sefer Tehillim to begin with? There are 150 Kapitelach in Tehillim, at least according to our counting, and we're going to get into tonight actually to the problem we have with that counting. There are 150 Kapitelach. David HaMelech's goal in writing Tehillim was to try and restore and bring back as much of the original Ruchnius that was created in the world as possible. Right, we talked long ago about how Adam Arishon looked out through the future Doris and saw David HaMelech as someone who had the potential to bring Ruchnius into the world and donated years of his life. The method and the goal and the vehicle through which David HaMelech was trying to bring Ruchnius in the world was Tehillim. Now in this particular kapitel, David HaMelech is going to expound upon the greatness and the perfection of Hashem's creation. The first half of the kapitel is about the creation of the world, and the second half of the kapitel is about Hashem's Torah. And we'll see at the end what motivated, what moved David HaMelech to write this particular kapitel. And why it comes here in this particular place that it does. Okay? Any questions so far? Okay, Pasuk Aleph, Lamanatzeach, Mizmor LeDavid, for the conductor, a Mizmor for David. We spoke before about Lamanatzeach, for the conductor, and his most likely instructions for the actual conductor. Remember, all of these Kapitelach were sang by the Levium with musical accompaniment. And that at a certain point, once the Aaron was returned from the Plish team back to the Jewish people, David HaMelech started publicly giving the Tehillim to the Levium to recite. So, Pasuk Beis says, Hashemayim misaprim kivoy keil, the heavens declare the glory of Hashem, umasei yadav magia rakia, and his handiwork is told about by the article translates rakia as firmament. I'm not really sure what a firmament actually is, but a rakia we usually consider to be a large expanse of space. The open, never-ending space would be a good way to describe it. Now, the Shemayim talks about the glory of Hashem. How many people think that the stars and the other celestial things can talk? Well, most of the Mefarshim say you would be correct. They really don't speak, but the way they speak is they inspire people to praise Hashem. So their speech is like inspiring people to give over speech. However, the Radak says a very interesting thing. He says that, you know what, they really do speak. If you look at the orbits of the planets and the stars and the solar system and all of the heavenly bodies, and you see the incredible precision and the incredible minute detail with which the orbits are calculated and interact with each other, that it's like the celestial bodies really are speaking. That they express themselves through their orbits and through the detail of how they interact. In fact, Ibn Ezra goes further and says that a person can't really appreciate this unless they study astronomy. And he encourages people to learn about astronomy, because when you learn how the planets and the orbits and the stars interact, it's amazing. It's amazing there's not a huge crash up there with everything crashing into each other. But the orbits and the gravity and the way they deflect and... My astronomical knowledge is coming to a close end here, but highlights of astronomy. Yeah, I should have. But that is the Ibn Ezra and the Radak. That's how the celestial bodies speak and say the glory of Hashem. The simpler meaning would be that they encourage people to praise Hashem, and that's how they speak. Yom liyom yabia aimer, day by day uttering speech, v'layla l'layla yachavidas, and night following night conveying knowledge. Right, yom yom labia aimer. It says here in the translation that speech is uttered. Rashi brings a different translation of the word yabia and says yabia, and not that I would argue on art scroll because I want to go there certainly, but yabia really means, according to Rashi, to flow. So really what the Pasuk is saying is yom liyom yabia omer, day after day, so the speech flows. meaning it's never ending, and it flows day after day. Night following night conveys knowledge. This continual pattern is a form of praise to Hashem and His wisdom. That not only do these celestial bodies interact with each other and with us according to such precision, but over and over again, without ever failing. For thousands of years, they've been doing this interaction without ever once going wrong. So night after night and day after day, they flow is a tribute, said the Mefarshim, to the wisdom of Hashem in the creation of the world. And once again, the celestial bodies are bringing us the praise of Hashem by observing the amazingness of His creations. Now, interestingly enough, that's also the way, warped as it may sound, that Avodah Zorah came to be. Because if you look in the Rambam will say, how is it possible that a person, people were created by Hashem from Adam or Rishon, how is it possible all of a sudden start worshipping idols? Doesn't really make sense. They'll come out one day and say, hey, I know. After all these years of worshipping Hashem, I think I'm going to carve this stone and bow down to it. Does that make sense, Dina? No? Okay. That doesn't make any sense. Says, you know what happened is, well, so listen, look at the amazing celestial bodies that Hashem created. We should praise them also because they're creations of Hashem. And what happened is it degenerated into people of lesser understanding actually beginning to pray and worship to the celestial bodies, to the sun, to the moon, to the stars. And then from there, it was, as they say today, a slippery slope down to worshiping anything else. The idea of the heavenly bodies is to inspire us to praise Hashem. So they're a vehicle through which we're supposed to appreciate the wisdom of Hashem as it flows day to day and night to night, constantly repeating its patterns over and over again. There's no ein oimer v'ein devarim. There's no speech and then our words. Beli nishma kailam. Unheard is their sound. So we appreciate the magnitude of their accomplishments, but they say nothing. They reflect the wisdom of Hashem. B'chol ha'aretz yatsa kavam. Throughout the earth, their precision goes forth. Their precision is evident to an observer. That's what it means by their precision. In other words, it doesn't mean that the sun sat down and decided it was going to be precise. We look at it, and it looks very precise to us. If you take astronomical calculations, you can figure out the orbit and predict where the sun's going to be. So that's very precise. It goes to that precision, which is, if you think about it, is incredible. V'kitzei sevel maleim, and to the end of the inhabited world they reach, l'shemesh sham oel baham, and the sun has set up a tent in their midst. That's a little strange, set up a tent in their midst. Rashi says the tent is referring here to the case around the sun that stops the rays from completely harming us. Now, I think, and this could just be me, but I think that he's referring to what we would call atmosphere, which he's talking about layers of invisible casing that slow down the sun's rays from harming us. So that would be like the ozone layer or the atmosphere, I believe. I don't know exactly. So he makes a tent for the sun. So that the sun doesn't burn us up, but yet can provide what we need. There's a tent through which, like if you notice, you go into a tent in the middle of the day, you see the sun outside, but it's a little hazier. It doesn't look dark inside the tent. Tents are very transparent. You can see through a tent. You look at someone out camping in the day, you see the shadows, you see what they're doing inside the tent. A tent is semi-transparent. The sun goes through, but it gets filtered a little bit. So that's a tent, and that stops, and that tent is what stops the sun's rays from harming us. In Pasuk Vav, he says, "V'hu kechasen yaitzei mechpasa." He's like a groom emerging from his chuppah. Yasis kegibor larut ayrach, and he rejoices like a powerful warrior running its course. The sun is like a groom. Why? What happens when a chassan comes out? What does everybody Mazel tov, they're happy, right? Mm-hmm. So what happens when the sun comes back every day? Person is happy, right? The sun comes up, And what happens when the sun gets up, when the sun rises later and later in the morning? How do people tend to get up? Oh, it's still dark. Right? It's a few more minutes of sleep. It's not even light out yet. On the other hand, in the summer, when it's light at 5:30 in the morning or 5 o'clock in the morning, whatever, people have an easier time getting up because people are rejoicing. That's what he's saying. It's the nature of people that we rejoice when the sun comes back. Right? We don't like the dark. I don't get up. The sun's not even up yet. I'm driving my kid to carpool in the pitch black. All right, my kid's waiting for the bus in the back, but the kid can wait for the bus at the same time in the morning and it's sunny out. Yeah, well, it's okay. He has to go to school. Right? But my poor kid has to wait out for the bus when it's pitch black. What do you mean? It's 7:15 in the morning. The summer has been light for 2 hours already. Right? Yeah, but my poor kid has to wait out in the dark. People are happy when the sun comes back. And the Pasuk Zion, he says, Mikzeh Shemayim Mitzasa. The end of the heavens is its source. Sekufaso al Ketzaisam. And its circuit is all the way to the other end. Ve'ein Nistar Mechamaso. And nothing is hidden from its heat. So the sun makes a circuit, and nothing is hidden from its heat. Now, it doesn't say that nothing is hidden. Usually we talk about the sun and the ore and the light of the sun. All of a sudden, we're talking about the heat of the sun. Because the heat of the sun, David HaMelech realizes, is something that no one can escape. You can hide from the light of the sun. You can go inside, you can go in the shade, but the heat of the sun affects everybody all the time. Doesn't matter whether you're inside, outside, it's affecting everything, it's affecting the world, it's affecting food, it's affecting everything. So there's no hiding from the sun. So David HaMelech now has described the celestial bodies and why they should bring a person to be moved to appreciate the wisdom of Hashem. Now he turns his attention in the second half of the kapitel to the Torah. And he says, Taras Hashem Tamima, Meshivas Nafesh. The Torah of Hashem is perfect. It restores the soul. Edus Hashem Nemana. The Edus, the testimony of Hashem is believable. Machkimas Pesi. And it makes a wise one simple. So it restores the soul. Meshivas Nafesh, besides making a good song, Simchas Torah, means that restores the soul because Torah is beneficial for a person at all times. It's even better than the sun. Sometimes the sun can burn you. Sometimes the sun isn't there. The sun can have different aspects of whether or not it's beneficial for you and how beneficial it is for you. But Torah is always beneficial for you. We call that Meshivas Nafesh, says David HaMelech. And it's a beautiful phrase, Meshivas Nafesh. It restores the soul. That's what Torah does. Edus Hashem Nemana. The testimony of Hashem is believable. The testimony, the edus here of the mouth is referring to are the mitzvahs. Now the truth is that some of Forshim say he means edus here literally, meaning things that are called a witness by the Torah. In the Torah itself, three things are called a witness: Shabbos, Tefillin, and Bris Milah. So those are things that remind a person of how trustworthy Hashem is. Unfortunately, there are other physical reminders, the luchos, that were in the Aaron. Those are physical reminders of the trustworthiness of Hashem. Right? So whether or not it means all the mitzvahs in general, or whether or not it means the reminders of the mitzvahs, either all the mitzvahs or those ones that are literally reminders, remind us that Hashem is trustworthy. And then in Pasuk 10, it says, Pekudei Hashem Yisharim, the orders of Hashem are upright and just. Mesam chelev, they make the heart glad. Mitzvah Hashem bara, the command of Hashem is clear. Me'eris onayim, it is enlightening to the eyes. So the mitzvah bara here is referring to mitzvah aseh, the positive commandments. So David HaMelech in the next pasuk is going to refer to the mitzvah los aseh, the negative commandments. But he calls the mitzvah aseh that are bara, that are clear, and they're mesamche lev. What does that mean, is mesamche lev? It makes a heart glad. It makes a heart glad because in order to do mitzvahs, what David HaMelech is alluding to is that a person has to use their intellect to direct their passions. Meaning that without the Torah, and without Hashem telling us what to do, people and their behavior and the world in general will be much more accurate. people would run after whatever particular taivas they had. However, it makes a heart glad when one can accomplish the idea of, I used my intellect and my knowledge and my study of Hashem's Torah in order to direct my passions and taivas in the proper area. And when we say that Torah is mesamche lev, so we use that all the time. You should hear all the time, Torah is mesamche lev, it makes you happy to learn. What does that mean? Ask a kid who's been in Yeshiva 15 hours and ask him if he's really happy right now. Right? Or would he rather be home sleeping? I have a son starting Masifta next year, and I'm sure that the first week of Masifta, he's not going to be used to three Siddurim a day, and he's going to come home, and I'm going to say, you mesamche lev? And he's going to snore right on the front steps, right? I don't know how mesamche lev is going to be. It doesn't mean that kind of simple mesamche lev, oh, I'm happy that I'm learning. It means I'm happy that I'm learning so that I can direct my taivas and my physical passions in the proper direction in order to serve Hashem. He goes on in Pasuk Yud to say, Yiras Hashem Tahira, the fear of Hashem is pure, Omedis forever, and it lasts forever. Mishpatei Hashem Emes, and the judgments, the dinim of Hashem are true, Tzadku Yachtav, and they're righteous altogether. Fear of Hashem is pure is referring to the mitzvahs losasei, negative commandments. Mesamche lev, that I can direct my taivas and passions to do mitzvahs that I'm commanded to do. I can make brachos, I can put on tefillin, I can keep Shabbos, I can keep couch, I can do things. Fear of Hashem is pure. The fear of Hashem is referring to mitzvahs lo saseh. That a person doesn't do something that the Torah prohibits because he fears Hashem. Now it's true that doing it because you love Hashem might be even better. But he says it's a pure thing that a person doesn't do averus, doesn't do things that are prohibited in the Torah because he fears Hashem. And it says in that is omedis la'ad, endures forever. It doesn't really endure forever. There are mitzvahs you don't do every second. Right? If I'm supposed to keep Shabbos, I can only do that 1/7 of the week. Keep kosher, I only keep kosher when I'm eating. If I'm supposed to put on tefillin, I only put on tefillin in the daytime. Sorry, bad example. So that most mitzvahs are done in a specific time, in a specific place. But Yiras Hashem, the fear of Hashem, that's what's omedis la'ad. That's what stands forever. Every second, the person can fear Hashem. And Mishpatei Hashem Emes, Tzadku Yachtav, his judgments are true. What's amazing, David HaMelech said, is there are no such thing as two Torah laws that ever conflict. No such thing as a Torah law that conflicts with another Torah law. Because Hashem made the Torah, and Mishpatei Hashem Emes. The Mishpatim of Hashem are true and perfect, and they're all together. They're Yachtav. It's one set of Torah. A man-made system of laws has laws that conflict with each other. Half the time, what is a court case? I have this law that says this, and you have this law that says that. A Jewish court case is discovering the truth about the situation. We have laws, and they don't conflict with each other. They're righteous all together. They're in one package of laws. That's what it means by Tzadku Yachtav. Some of these are very well-known phrases, and I'm not sure that when people use these phrases, we really always know what we're talking about. We just use them, and we write them, and we read them, and it's beautiful, and the Rav says them on Shabbos in a drasha, Mishpatei Hashem Emes, the laws of Hashem are true, and everybody says, yes, they are. What does that mean? It means that it's a whole package, that everything is one set of Torah laws. Nothing conflicts with each other, nothing's added on, nothing's stuck in there, that we didn't have some common law, and then the Britain guys came and made some more laws, and the American founding fathers added some laws onto that, and now we go to court and we can't figure out which law to apply. It's one universal package. So David HaMelech goes on in Yud Aleph and says, "The Nachmari Mezav, they're more desirable than gold." More desirable than gold. Umipaz Rav, and gold, and then abundance of gold. Umisuki mi devash benoifet sufi, and sweeter than honey and dripping from the combs. More desirable than gold. Why is it more desirable than gold? Because of the old cliche, you can't take it with you. When a person goes, they leave their gold behind, despite what the Egyptians tried to do when they filled their tombs with gold. So about 2,000 years later, someone could come along and open up the tomb and take all the gold out, because you can't take it with you.
But it's more, last that long.
Even last that long. So it's even more precious than gold. You can't take away the mitzvahs and the Torah that a person has. Now, David HaMelech hasn't mentioned himself so far in this kapitel. Now he's going to come and he's going to mention himself for the first time. We're 12 psukim in to a 15 psukim kapitel. David HaMelech hasn't said anything about himself yet. Now he's going to say, Gam av decha nizar behem. Even your servant, meaning David HaMelech, himself, is scrupulous in them. B'shamram ekev rav. And in observing them, there is great reward. Notice, David does not consider himself amongst the wise men. He's not putting himself up, right? But he's saying, you know what? Even me, who's not from the great Chachamim and the great Tzaddikim, even I tried to observe all of your laws. Even I tried to be a servant of Hashem and do everything that I was supposed to do. Even I. Now, we look back at that, and such a nevus is hard for us to understand, because David HaMelech, few people have been compared to David HaMelech in history. If David HaMelech is saying, even I, who am not from the Chachamim and not from the Tzaddikim, right? But even I, who just try and do the best I can, am scrupulous in observing your mitzvahs. And the reward in them is great. Now it's not clear if he's talking about the reward at the end of a person's life, or he's talking about the reward like at the end of days when Mashiach comes. He's talking about the reward at the end of doing all the mitzvahs is great. And the Mefarshim are unclear whether or not he means at the end of one's life the reward is great, or at the end of all time the reward is great. I don't think there's any reason why it couldn't be both. But the Mefarshim are split on what exactly that means, that at the end there's a great reward. What end is he referring to? But even I, David HaMelech, all right, tried to do that. But then he says, you'd give, but you know what? Shgios mi yavin. Mistakes, who can see? Ministaros nakeni. From unperceived faults, cleanse me. Now, David HaMelech is not talking about accidental mistakes, meaning, I know I shouldn't eat this, but I ate it anyway, and now I'm so sorry. Right? We call that a shagagah, but Rav Hirsch says that shgios here he's talking about are mistakes. Are honest mistakes. Meaning, I understood that I was supposed to do things a certain way. I understood I was supposed to do something. I was wrong. But I didn't do it thinking that, oh, I can't help myself. I have to eat this. I can't help myself. I have to do whatever. Say this Lashon Hara. It means I learned what I was supposed to do, but I made a mistake. That's called shigios. So that, he says, cleanse me from these unperceived faults. Help me make sure that I understand properly what to do. Right? This is David HaMelech's first request. Understand who it is, that my understanding could lead me astray. I can learn and learn wrong. And we've seen in the past, I mean, David HaMelech's tormentors, many of them, Doeg, etc., were people who learned and thought they knew the right thing to do and came to the wrong understanding. He's saying, protect me from that kind of thing. I myself, your lowly servant, will make sure that I don't say Lashon Hara, because it says in the Torah, don't say Lashon Hara. But if I learn that you're supposed to say this, and I shouldn't, that I was supposed to give this answer about a shidduch, because I learned all the halachos of Lashon Hara, and then turns out that was wrong. Turns out I shouldn't have said that. But I honestly learned everything and thought I should. That's what he's saying, protect me from that. Cleanse me from those kind of errors. That's the reward that David HaMelech wants for trying to scrupulously observe the mitzvahs. Is my reward should be that you will make sure, Hashem, I don't misunderstand what I'm supposed to do. Gam mizeidim chasot avdecha. Also from intentional sins restrain your servant. Al yim shaluvi. Don't let them rule me. Az esam. Then I shall be perfect. V'nikesi v'pesha rav, and I will be cleansed of great transgressions. Now, he's not asking Hashem, stop me from doing averus. Everybody has free will. David HaMelech, if he wanted to, could do an averus just like any of us can. But when he says, restrain your servant, don't let them rule me, the second thing he's asking for is make the circumstances of my life as conducive as possible to doing mitzvahs. And as unconducive, non-conducive, ex-conducive, deconducive to doing avers. So there's no question that a person can be tempted by their circumstances. We here who live in a big city have a very easy time buying kosher food. If a person came over from Europe and plunked himself down in the middle of Wyoming, circumstances make it much more difficult. You'd have to get on the internet and order it from somewhere. It's just a little bit unfair. They probably didn't even have the internet then. But that's much more difficult than if you plunked yourself down on the Lower East Side and there was a deli on every corner. All right, so he's saying, make the circumstances of my life so that it's easier for me not to do intentional evaders. Not that I won't still have free will, but don't make it so hard for me. It's like I think that you once told me, Francis, that he was talking about the fact that a child has to be mechabed their parents. He says, but you know what? The parents don't have to make it so hard. Right? You don't have to make it so hard for your kids to give you covered. Be a good parent. Right? There's no reason. It doesn't matter whether you are or not. Your kids have to be mechabed you, but don't make it so hard. Everyone about saying, you know what? You're right. It doesn't matter what you do, Hashem. I can't do avers. Don't make it so hard. Right? Give me circumstances that are easier on it. And he concludes with one of the most famous lines to Tehillim, although we say that almost every kapitel, but one of the most famous of the most famous lines, Yulur Etzonim Rifi V'Gion Libi Lafonecha Hashem Tzuri V'Goali, which we conclude Shemona Esrei with. May these words the expressions of my mouth find favor in the thoughts of my heart before you, Hashem, my rock and my redeemer. Now, we say this at the end of Shemona Esrei. If you look at these words, it seems to me like it would be a lot better to say them at the beginning of Shemona Esrei. May these words and my thoughts of my heart that I'm going to say before you, Hashem, my rock and my redeemer, find favor. That's a great way to start Shemona Esrei. And all the Mefarshim ask this, the Gemara asks this question. That's a great way, says the Gemara, to start Shemona Esrei. Instead, we end Shemona Esrei saying, now that I've done all this, I really hope that what I'm about to say is good. So the Gemara says, David HaMelech said 18 kapitalach and then wrote this pasuk. We say 18 brachas of Shemona Esrei. So it's a remez to us from David HaMelech that this belongs at the end of Shemona Esrei. Now the Gemara comes back and says, yes, but this is the 19th kapitel, not the 18th. The Gemara says, no. The first and second, what we call the first and second kapitel, the Gemara counts as one. In the times of the Gemara, this would have been Yud Ches, not Yud Tes. So the Marsha says, well, how is it possible? What happened? We woke up one day and said we didn't like that counting and we cut it in half? I mean, how do we go against the Gemara says it's one kapitel in the beginning? I think we talked about the first and second kapitel really sort of flow together. Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden we decided, well, we didn't really like what the Gemara decided, so we're going to cut it in half. I said, no, but how many brachas do we have in Shemona Esrei? 19. Because we added, the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah added a 19th bracha against the meaning. So it says the Marsha, once we added a 19th bracha, in order to keep in line with David HaMelech, we started counting the first and second kapitelach as two separate kapitel, in order that this be on the 19th kapitel instead of the 18th, which is how one of the ways that we get to our counting today. We'll see later in Tehillim, there's two other places where we count differently than Chazal count. But we count the first and second now as this, and so David HaMelech closes his 19th brachas with this, and we close the 19 brachas of our Shemona Esrei with the same pasuk. Now, this is a beautiful kapitel, and I don't know why David HaMelech wrote this kapitel. Many of the kapitelach we've discussed so far have discussed various things in David HaMelech's life, his gratitude for being saved, or different occurrences, or different ideas, even if it wasn't a specific historical occurrence, that prompted him to write a particular kapitel. The next one we're going to start, kapitel Ches, David HaMelech used to say whenever Yoav took the army out to battle. Kapitel Chaf Aleph, he used to say whenever there was a victory in battle. However, and there's some Mephoshim that teach it a little bit differently, that we said it for David after he said it for us, but whatever. And here we have a beautiful kapitel. It's really not clear in the kapitel why David HaMelech felt moved to write these stirring descriptions of the Torah and in the first part of Hashem's creations. And in fact, he uses 12 different descriptions for the Torah. He calls it law, testimony, perfect, faithful. It restores the soul. It makes simple people wise. It has statutes, judgments, fear. And in fact, the Vilna Gaon says that this is the kapitel that should be the Shir Hayayim, the Shir for the day on Shavuos. Because of the glorious description of the Torah, and Shavuos, of course, is the appropriate holiday for that. So therefore, he says, this is the kapitel you should say on Shavuos. So what's this kapitel for? When Levim sang this kapitel, what did the people think? Glad you asked that question. I'll give you a mashal. People are riding through the desert on a camel. 5 guys riding through the desert on a camel. All of a sudden, a bas kol comes out. It says, stop riding the camels. Stop. Get off the camels. They get off the camels. It's $1, you know. It's just, well, they have these tourist things where they put you on the camel. They say it's free. It's $1 to get off. You do the camels. Very high. So they get off the camels. And he tells them, now, put your hands in the sand and close your hands and grab a handful of sand. And they do that. He says, now get back on the camel and keep riding till you get to your destination and don't open your hands. So they ride all the way to the destination. And they get there, the boss says, now open your hands. They open his hands. Right where they grabbed, they didn't get sand. There were diamonds in the sand. But they didn't know because they weren't allowed to open their hands. And what did the camel riders say to themselves? If only I'd known I was grabbing diamonds, I'd have stopped a little longer. I'd have picked up a few more. What David HaMelech was telling us is that life is a huge desert. The end journey is way over there at the oasis somewhere. There are more distractions than a person can shake a stick at in life. And certainly in our times, that's true beyond true. How easy is it to remain focused 24/7, they say today, on nothing but serving Hashem? It's almost impossible. When we see a tzaddik, one of the things we say in praise of a tzaddik is he always thinks about serving Hashem. Well, tzaddik, that's supposed to be everybody. But the distractions are beyond belief. Says David HaMelech, how do you counter distractions? The way you counter distractions and keep your, what's the phrase we say, the eye on the prize. Right? I think that's a sports expression or something. No, but keep your eye on the prize. Right? And keep your eye on the goal and stay focused is that you have to keep in mind Hashem's awesomeness versus the distractions around you. If you look around and everything's a distraction, and there's some way distant goal down there, it's very hard not to become absorbed in the distractions. If a person keeps in their mind, you know what? There's all these distractions around. I have to get way down there and imagines the greatness of Hashem through the examples of the celestial bodies and the greatness of Hashem through his Tyra and the full unit and the yacht of Tyra. It enables a person to avoid the distractions and put on blinders and seek the goal at the end. That's what David HaMelech wrote this kapitel for. That when a person comes to distractions in life, which for David HaMelech and may have been only an occasional zach, for us is something that is an ongoing thing, that a person should say this kapitel. A person should come to this kapitel. Say, I'm going to focus my eye on the goal. I'm going to think about the greatness of Hashem. And the way that David HaMelech does that is through the heavens and the greatness of Tyra and all of the things that we've described here in the Torah, the perfection and how it's Meshivas Nafesh and how it brings a person to fear and how it's a Tyra of Yachdav. And if a person keeps all those things, then goes on in front of the Vilna Gaon, from Shavuos to Shavuos, a person keeping their mind on their eye on the prize and their sight on the goal of where they're trying to get to. That's what the David HaMelech wrote this kapitzel for. How can we keep in mind? How can we focus? What can we focus our minds on to avoid the distractions? But this is what you can focus your mind on to avoid the distractions. And Beres Hashem, then from Shavuos to Shavuos, we come and we've kept a whole year focused on the prize and avoided all the distractions. Whether they're distractions of Gashmias in America, or whether distractions of Anius when we were in Europe, whatever the distractions are, a person focuses on these Yisaitim that are in this kapitel. And David HaMelech used to tell him to say this kapitel over and over again. To keep a person focused in the proper frame of mind in order to be an Eved Hashem. Any questions? Devorah, any questions?